Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for still staying here at this late hour. I was expecting to have at least one audience speaker after me, but I'm very lucky today. I will tell you a story in the next couple of minutes, and it has to do with sugar, it has to do with sugar beet, and of course I'll stress Minnesota, because we are in Minnesota, of course. I'll tell you some of the research work that we've done, but more importantly, how we have taken that research information to growers, how they have adopted the practice to make their lives better. I'll start with talking about sugar. Each of us have had some sugar today, either in the form of coffee or tea. If you had soda, make sure it's only special types that have sugar inside, or Gatorade. In the US of A, we produce about 85% of the sugar requirements, and we import about 15% from all 40 different countries. Because of our diverse geographic localities, we are fortunate in that we can have sugarcane in places like Florida, in Louisiana. The picture on the bottom right there is, of course, Hawaii, where they have about 36,000 acres, and of course, sugar beet. Sugar beet is grown in about 10 states, including Minnesota, where we are number one in the US of A, and I'm from North Dakota, and Minnesota, North Dakota is number two. Sugar beet can also be grown in very warm climates, including California. So we can have sugar beets in temperate as well as tropical areas. In North Dakota and Minnesota, we together produce 60% of the total U.S. sugar beet production. And this involves over $4 billion in total economic activity. Our growers are the best in the world. At one time, it used to be very much human labor, lots of women in particular, because they're very tough, they have very strong backs, and a lot of the hard work, which was weed control, thinning, were the women and the ladies. And I have lots of help from the people from EPA, especially the ladies, because they have worked in sugar beet fields. This is a picture here of today, whereby we have a very limited amount of time to do our operations. So in the Red River Valley, where most of the sugar beet is grown in southern Minnesota, we have relatively flat fields. Growers have very large machinery and equipment. This here is a picture of a planter with 48 rows, and in about 5 or 7 days, we can complete our planting operations. If it gets too wet, growers can go to aircrafts to apply their pesticides, and we start planting in April if you're lucky. And this year, August the 7th, we were harvesting sugar beets, believe it or not. This is what they do. They top the beets first. We take off the green tops. Then in the Red River Valley, we'll have 24 operations starting from October 1st. And in 10 ideal days, we'll finish harvesting over 15 million tons of sugar beets. Many people kind of complain about our cold conditions here. We don't complain. We use what we have. We use our cold conditions to store our beets for over 7 months, and that is an advantage that we have over everybody else in the world. Please note, we learned of this practice, and we have improved it from the people in Russia. Now, I just said we were very cold, but in the summer, we can be warm and humid, especially in the sugar beet fields. And one of the diseases caused by a fungus, Cercospora pedicola, likes it warm and wet. Way back in 1998, our growers lost over $100 million to this disease. What does it do? As we know, the sugar beet plant, the leaves are the factories of the plant. If we damage the leaves, we reduce our yield. This is a picture of a plot where the leaves are damaged. I'll take a closer up, and if you look carefully, you'll see a lot of dead leaves. The ones that are killed first are the oldest leaves. Sugar beet leaves are like people. Who are more productive amongst us, the young or the older guys like me? The older people, all right? They're much more productive. They have young people to do a lot of hard work. With sugar beet, the oldest leaves are the most productive leaves, and when they die, you reduce yield as well as quality. So what we did from 1998 was the fungicides that we had were not working. They were few. We had resistance issue. So our job was to go out, find different chemistries, see what will work, get that information to the growers. This is a picture from 1999, which is a check. Anytime we see brown leaves, it means we're losing money. We don't want that. We had issues with fungicides such as Benlate. If you use any product over and over, you have resistance. You heard about weeds. This is fungicide. And we were fortunate. Around that same time, we had a new triazole fungicides that EPA gave us permission to use on a special Section 18 label. That is, growers can use it. We did that for about 5 years until we got different chemistries. So we used cetraconazole, which was a new chemistry, but a very old one. Triphenyl tin hydroxide was way before my time in the 70s. And between then and now, what we did, we have been fortunate. We've had a number of new chemistry fungicides that we have used, and we have incorporated the old with the new. If you look at the picture there, the top left-hand picture is a plot that was not treated. In that area there, you'll see all the plants, the leaves are dying. The other pictures show treatments that are very effective. And what we did there, we did rotation of different chemistries, old plus new, sometimes individually or in mixtures. The picture more or less tells the story, but I'll show you one slide or so with data. What it shows there is the non-treated check had a leaf spot rating of 10. That meant all the leaves, the green leaves, were killed, and you had regrowth of new leaves. If you check the yield, it was about 6,000 pounds per acre, and all the treatments resulted in better disease control and significantly higher yield. If you're a grower, that's good. But what's more important for the grower is it economical? And the answer is yes. If you apply fungicides in a timely manner, you'll get between $600 to $700 more per acre than if you planted and you went by the lakeside that we have so many of in Minnesota. What also happened? In 1998, the average number of fungicide applications was about 3.7. Some growers in Wilmar, they had no hobbies, so they sprayed 12 times in the season. The fungicides were not effective. Now, the average number of applications is 1.74. What does this mean? It means that the growers have reduced their fungicide application by 52%. And they have reported to us by annual surveys that 94% of them had good or excellent disease control. Now we have done the hard work, we have this research information. What do we do with it? If you have lots of literature, lots of publication, and it's not being used, it's considered useless. So we use our research sites more or less as field demonstration sites. As the picture shows you there, the top picture on the right is a picture of what happens when you have the problem. The picture below shows you what happens when you use effective control. The growers will come to the field layers. They will ask questions to find out which treatments are working, how to use them, and in terms of efficacy. We also share this research not only amongst people from North Dakota and Minnesota, but from sugar beet researchers throughout the U.S. and worldwide. We are very concerned about our agriculturists and other educators giving good information, so we have them involved, especially the people from Winfield and others, to get the correct information so they can share it with the growers. We have the largest world trade show in the world in Fargo and Grand Forks, where we have our growers come there to get information. We have seminars in all of our sugar beet production areas, and of course, in today's world where everybody has their computer, internet, radio, production guide, we have all of those that growers can use based on what they like. As extension educators, we are responsible for justifying our existence. We have to make impact report to say, okay, what did we do? Who did it impact? This impact report here just says that we did something that was very successful, and one of the growers testified that, and I'll quote, he said the research-based recommendations on when and how to use different fungicides have been crucial in the control of Cercospora leaf spot. Those are not my words, those are the words of a producer. So I'll conclude by saying that we do an annual survey, and 94% of the growers have reported good to excellent disease control with recommended practices. The growers have willingly decided to change their own behavior. They have had better fungicides that they have used less of, but they have used it in a more timely manner, and they have reduced their application by 52% from 1998 to 2014. They have adopted these research-based information. They have become more successful. How successful? They are using $14 million less to make much more money and make much more profit, so much so that the year 2015, it just so happens, we have had our largest yield ever since 1926. With that, I'll be happy to take any questions and acknowledge my Research and Education Board for funding this research and the growers who allow me to go into their fields and contaminate it with Sarcospora leafspot. Thank you.
We've got time for a couple of questions. I've got one. Is Sarcospora the number one disease on sugar beets, or is there other diseases?
The question is Sarcospora our number one disease? It is the number one foliar disease in North Dakota, Minnesota, yes.
Are they able to mix fungicide mode of actions in the same chemical spray, or are the different mode of actions in one application or not?
The question is, do they use a different mode of action together, or do they apply them separately? They mix them at the same time, and we have been doing that for a number of years, and we are encouraging chemical companies especially to do some of that mixing rather than the growers, because then the formulators do a better job of mixing different chemistries. Thank you.